Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
1-1 the count to Peterson. The pitch.
Ground ball right side and through for a base hit. Around third and coming home is Wisdom. He will score as Marisnik slides safely into third base. Cubs up 2-0 over the Marlins.
Next offering, a little ground ball toward the middle. Baez to his left, gloves, throws, and he got him again. Another excellent play by Baez. He is putting on a highlight show today. Here comes the 1-2. On the way. Swing and a miss, strike three, and the ball game is over. The Chicago Cubs win. Greg Kimbrell does it again.
Indeed he did, and the Cubs salvaged one. At least some team in this city did, but it hasn't been fun of late. We're back to that angsty feeling of watching an offense really struggle to string positive events together in a way that produces runs that help them win games. Cubs are hanging in there in large part because their divisional rivals are also losing a bunch of games. Sahadev Sharma covers the Cubs for The Athletic, and he joins us now. He is on Twitter at Sahadev Sharma. He is on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And he's on Bernstein and Rahimi with Layla off today. So, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dan. How are you?
Good. You have a good Father's Day?
Yeah, it was work. You know, I took Friday and Saturday off. So Sunday was work and it was fine. Am I going to complain about spending my day at the ballpark? Of course not. It was great.
Well, this is just yet another one of these all too familiar downturns. And I don't know what infects Cubs bats in the way that we see this happen. It shouldn't be this way, but it is. So what is not happening now?
Yeah, I think there are a few things. I think the biggest thing, and I know people are like, there's so many all-stars on this team, losing a couple of these, you know, role players shouldn't matter. But Duffy and Horner being on the shelf matters a lot. And we've been talking about this for years. They need different types of hitters in the lineup. I look at it as this lineup has been good in the past. When was it good? When Dexter Fowler and Ben Zobrist were there. Are they the greatest players on those rosters? No, but they had tremendous impact for their contact ability, for their ability to work at bats, for the types of pitches they hit and the types of pitches they swung at. Now, Dexter Fowler and Ben Zobrist are probably a level above Mecco Hoerner and Matt Duffy. Yes, I understand that, but they do things that the rest of this lineup doesn't do that well. And I think that changes everything. It changes the way pitchers can attack the entire lineup. And it has a cumulative effect on the whole group. I think that matters. I think Chris Bryant is in the biggest funk he's been in this year. And that's fine, in my opinion. You can have a superstar slump every once in a while. You just need someone else to pick up the pace. Problem is Wilson Contreras is slumping, probably because he's being ridden too hard because they don't have a quality backup catcher. Anthony Rizzo hasn't really locked in and been that guy that I think he's so close to being a guy that kind of carries them, but he's not really there yet. And then you have guys like Hayward and Happ who just aren't, you know, every day it looks like their OPS is dropping another 10 points. So it's there's some really rough stretches going on and you're missing some key guys and other guys are just overworked. And it's just, and we're seeing this awful April offense that, you know, we talked about in April and, I don't think anybody wants to watch that anymore.
Doesn't help when Jake Arrieta is this bad. And that was really bad. And it wasn't just not having command of one pitch. It was getting hit hard on any number of pitches. It just, it's got to get better.
Yeah, you know, it was weird. His velocity was like 95, 96, and we haven't seen that. I thought there was some nice movement at times on certain pitches. That obviously the location wasn't there, and he was getting hammered. It's not going to work. These short outings, one after the other, just doesn't work for this team. That's the first time in a while they've been blown out like that in back-to-back games. But ultimately, you know, these short outings are just going to eat that bullpen up. And it's so fun to watch this bullpen just come in and shut the door like they did Sunday, because I feel like it's a six-inning game right now for the Cubs, but it's getting to that sixth inning that's proving to be really difficult on a consistent basis, and getting to that sixth inning with the lead because the offense can't produce enough, right? It's a combo working hand-in-hand here where the starting pitching isn't doing enough and the offense is almost putting the starting pitchers on their heels from the get-go.
Yeah, our guy Ian Happ really has been struggling, and it was a shame because right before he got hurt, he had hit that big three-run home run, and yeah. I just wonder how much of a setback that was. Everything looked like it was trending for him to get back, and just the interruption seems to have disrupted that.
You know, I just started doing a little bit of research on him to see, like, you know, we know the bad Ian Happ or whatever, the one that had obvious holes. He swung too much at high heat. He chased breaking balls. He's done doing that. Those things have been fixed. I was wondering, I was like, oh, has he reverted back to the old Ian Happ? He is not. He's not doing those bad habits that they worked so hard to get rid of. So I think there's, I don't want to say it's as simple as being more aggressive, but he does take a lot of pitches, and I know that's his game, and it's got to be hard to switch that up. I don't know. I'm going to talk to him either today or tomorrow, hopefully, and try and get a better understanding of how he looks at it. But I think, you know, the Chris Bryant impact of being more aggressive early on this year, that helped him a lot. And that led to pitchers now not throwing him as many strikes. I wrote about that recently. I think Ian Happ may need to try that. I also know that that's not really Ian Happ's game, so it may be difficult. That can be a drastic change for a player. And we know how good Ian Happ is as far as being patient at the plate. Maybe he just needs to start jumping on some of those first pitch fastballs or fastballs earlier in the count.
It can't be that Patrick Wisdom matters the way that he is. It's just not supposed to be. He's been reliable in the field as well in a way that I didn't expect of making some of these routine plays. It's sometimes, you know, a AAA guy just it gets a little shaky out there. He has not been. And that at bat yesterday was like the Rizzo at bat that we'd been talking about.
Yeah, that's one of those at bats. I think that's the type of at bat that can kind of help the entire lineup, right? Like we were talking about with Duffy and Nico before. I think what Wisdom is doing right now, in my opinion, is really helping the depth of this team in the long run. Over the course of the season, as long as they can get healthy and stay healthy on offense, Ross is going to have a lot of luxuries as far as, I know what my strengths are with this team, with each individual player. Let's look at who's on the mound and let's really play the matchups here. Patrick Wisdom, Sergio Alcantara, Matt Duffy, Nico Horner, kind of mix and match with those guys. Lean on Chris Bryant's versatility on defense. Find the right way. Like that could turn out to be – this is a really rough patch for the Cubs, but if you want to spin it into a positive, it's you're getting a chance to see guys like Alcantara and Wisdom, and I think they could be pieces, like at worst, they're depth pieces for the rest of this year and perhaps beyond. And you need them. I just keep going back to the fact that we've learned a lot this year about how important unique depth pieces are that are slightly different from what you have in your starting lineup and allows you to kind of switch that lineup around and kind of play matchups. And when I say matchups, we often default to like left, right. It's so much more than that, right? It's the type of pitches the pitcher throws, where they like to locate their pitches, things like that. And I think maybe other teams have been doing that much better than the Cubs. Even if the Cubs have wanted to do that, they just haven't had the right types of players on their bench of late. And they're able to do that now when healthy.
I do not envy Jed Hoyer at the moment because he and I have talked, and we've talked on this show, and he and Layla and I have talked about for years, not knowing the ball, you know, what ball are we playing with? How do you value what your assets are and other teams' assets for which you may be trading without knowing which ball you're using? And now, as of today, I don't know that they're going to have enough data to determine how many pitchers were reliant on grip enhancement. So what do you do here? It's one thing internally to figure out how you're going to handle it and make sure your guys aren't doing anything. But when you're starting to – you're having conversations about maybe adding, hell, maybe subtracting even. I don't know if they're going to be buyers or sellers when you don't know what anybody's worth because you don't know really who they are.
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. I think we're already seeing some of it, right? Like, the guys aren't just going to stop using it today. If they're smart, they started weaning off it a while ago because there's been whispers about this happening even before the announcement came. So I think we started to see numbers drop as far as RPMs. You can kind of see who's using it, who wasn't. I also think it's dangerous to look at the RPM and just assume that someone's using it, unless it's just like, blatantly obvious, like 100 or 200 RPM, that can be someone tired. Someone's tired. Someone just is having an off day, you know. But there are enough red flags that I think scouts kind of have an idea of what's going on. You have to start. I think these next few weeks are going to be really important. But you're right in the sense that you have all this information for the first few months that you want to use. Now you have to kind of weigh it carefully against the next few weeks. And then you have to wonder, well, okay, this guy, well, what's the adjustment period, right? There are going to be pitchers that stink for like 2 weeks, right? Or however long, and they figure it out. They get back to it, and they figure out, they make the necessary adjustments. Not everyone is just going to crash and say, yep, the only reason I was good is because I was using sticky stuff. There are going to be pitchers who are still good, but there's an adjustment period. And you have to hope that doesn't lead to injuries, right? We've already seen a few, and it's going to be a lot. There's so many different factors to weigh. I do think it's possible. I do think the Cubs, in general, have done a really good job of identifying the characteristics that they like, whether the guy's having success or not, and then translating that into success for a few months with them.
Yeah, it's just I'm worried about guys also being unfairly targeted. You know, if you're going to have human beings making these decisions and deciding who's suspect and who isn't, and if hitters are allowed to use pine tar, like there's pine tar in the game.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned about what happens next and how game to game, ump to ump, situation to situation, you're just going to have uneven application of rules they're making up as we go.
Yeah, I hope that we'll see how it's executed over the next few days. And I hope that when you're saying uneven application, that isn't a problem. I hope that it's just consistent. They just check them at certain points and hopefully go over the rules before the game with the manager saying, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to check your starter at these points, be more general. If you don't want to give them a heads up, I'm checking you right now, right? Because maybe there's a concern that they know when to not use it, hide the sticky stuff or whatever. I'm just saying, just make sure that there's clear communication here prior to the game with the managers and there's a plan. And it sounds like there is a plan and that's why this is happening now. Instead of it being more random, it can be a little bit more regimented. I hope it's not like certain guys are targeted. That's why I'm being really careful too. I don't want to target someone and just say, announce to Twitter that, hey, this guy's RPMs are down. Yeah, sure, but maybe he's pitching more than he's ever pitched in his life. Maybe he's hiding an injury right now and he's just trying to pitch through it. There are so many different things that could lead to that. So it's hard to just throw out blanket accusations. But we also need to be diligent and say, like, well, what's going on? Are you healthy? Are you okay? So there's that balance for the media, too. Like, the pitchers are going to start getting annoyed with us asking these questions, but how are we supposed to do our job?
I get it.
Going on, we have to ask.
And especially when you know somebody has had, I don't know, a big stain on their hat that looked kind of odd for a while. And I'll be honest that I've been watching Craig Kimbrel fairly closely ever since they said you have to have a clean cap. because I don't know what that was, but it was a something. Something made that giant stain, and when he's adjusting his hat, something's on there, and the fact that it was looked like 99 yesterday, touching 99 and under control, looks pretty good to me.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I mean, Kimbrel was one of those guys that you want to make sure and just check the numbers. Nothing's changed from what I've seen. I didn't check yesterday, I don't believe, but I mean, it's been, I remember when the crackdown kind of started before the memo was sent out, and it was kind of the beginning of this month. Nobody, Kimbrel hasn't changed. His numbers look great. If anything, he seems like he's almost getting better. I mean, those three relievers in general, Tepera, Chafin, and Kimbrel, it feels like they just don't give up anything anymore. I was trying to see how many hits Tepera's given up because I feel like I don't remember him allowing base runners ever, and it's been like five in the past month and a half, which is just insane considering his usage.
Yeah, it's nice to have these eight inning games then. You know, it's when you can just turn it over to him. But then again, what could you get for him if you're really looking at big picture here? That who knows? I just don't know the scope of the conversations because you start thinking maybe if we're learning about the flaws of this Cubs team and they don't look like they can win a World Series, it might just be that's your most valuable trade piece.
Yeah, and a lot of people are in my mentions or in the comments saying similar things about you got to sell, you got to think about the future, you have too many guys on walk years. I mean, we know all the facts, right? We've been talking about this for a long time, years. I just think you can't sell when you're in first place and you have a team that looks pretty solid. I know they're flawed. We just talked about all their flaws, but I think they're good enough to make a run. We've seen how they look. When they're clicking, it's just really hard to sell to a fan base and suggest that you care about winning or that winning a World Series is the ultimate goal when you're in first place and you're talking about selling. There's just no way to trade Craig Kimbrel and justify it right now. I get what you're saying. I can totally see that point of view, and I understand the need for fans to want to say, certain fans to want to say, hey, trade this guy, trade Kimbrel, trade Bryant, and you know, 2021 isn't realistic to win it all. You lose a clubhouse. I think it can hurt the reputation of a franchise. I think there are other things at play here than just saying these guys are free agents and you can't lose them for nothing. It's a bad look for the franchise and the team in general to sell when you're contending. So you have to really weigh all these things. I'm not saying just rule it out. I'm saying make sure you're weighing the things that aren't as obvious to us, at least.
Sahadev Sharma, great stuff. Thank you, sir.
Of course. Thanks for the time. Take care.
That's Sahadev Sharma. Next up, let's talk about that exciting U.S. Open yesterday won by the Spaniard Jon Rahm. We're going to talk with Andy Johnson of Fried Egg Golf. People have been urging that we have him on, saying that we would really enjoy him, so we're looking forward to it. He's next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Jon Rahm for birdie. How big this is from 18 feet.
Similar to the putt he just made at 17. He keeps his head still this time.
Pretty big one made here 13 years ago.
Absolutely.
On Sunday. That was to get into a playoff. We'll see, first of all, this goes in and what it means.
Another one is landed at the 72nd hole, this time for Rahm to take the lead in the U.S. Open.
Well, that was fun. Curving toward the hole and dropping in. Highlight courtesy NBC. Let's talk a little bit about a really entertaining weekend on a well set up course. And our next guest covers golf at thefriedegg.com. He is on Twitter at @the_woke_yolk. He's Andy Johnson, and he's with us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Andy, that one didn't disappoint, did it?
Hey, Dan, thanks for having me on. Yeah, it was an unbelievable Sunday. I mean, obviously we had a jam-packed leaderboard with a bunch of superstars, really the top five in the world were all in it at a point on Sunday, and had a thrilling finish with Jon Rahm taking over the number one place in the world rankings and winning his first major.
Coming down to for him and Louis at the end, and just seeing how people were rooting for Rahm, knowing what he had gone through because he got vaccinated too late. And he got a six-shot lead and ends up having to bow out of the tournament in Ohio, but he was going to walk to that win and loses out on $1.7 million, all because he just kind of waited too long. And I wonder what lesson the PGA Tour is going to learn and some of these other players are going to learn now. We're hoping the players around sports, we're just going to learn, get vaccinated and good things may happen to you. I'm glad that this sort of puts the exclamation point on it.
Yeah, it was such a weird situation a couple weeks ago at the Memorial. And I think John Rahm, he's been one of the most thoughtful players and press conferences over his career, especially given how young he is. He's always been one of the better interviews in golf. He obviously had a young child, which who knows how that weighed into it. But, he talked so eloquently about the whole experience. And, you know, you feel for him. He's obviously from Spain. The thing that maybe more so for the guy that's already made, you know, tens of millions of dollars, the $1.7 million he lost out on was, you know, his parents being over from Spain, getting to meet his baby for the first time. He missed out on that because he had to go immediately into quarantine. So for him to get it done on his first Father's Day at the place that he won his first PGA Tour event at and where he proposed to his now wife in the hiking trails above Torrey Pines, what a cool story on Sunday. And obviously, I think he's been trending towards being, you know, the best player in the world. And he's got all the skill set to be at the top of the game for a long time.
And he's losing that sort of some of the hothead tendencies that have derailed him in the past that we've seen him. It's not quite Bryson, but we've seen him, you know, stab his putter into the ground. We've seen him wear his emotions on his sleeve. And we got the schadenfreude of that glorious DeChambeau meltdown, which you kind of saw. You saw building. You saw it coming a little bit. But it appears that Rahm has emerged from his somewhat similar issues.
Yeah, I think obviously, I mean, Tiger, for example, always was a little hot, ran hot on the golf course. I think it's golf such a tricky game because you have to keep your emotions in check. Like that, I think one of the things about golf that the only thing I think, you know, that compares across sports is a pitcher where, you know, you have to, it's not reactionary, right? A line drive isn't hit to you and you're making a decision in a split second. You've got a minute between shots or 5 minutes between shots, just like a pitcher has, you know, a good amount of time between pitches. And that that leads to a lot of self-loathing and frustration. So I think, you know, I think the outburst can be excused a little bit, but, you know, just in the manner of which sometimes they happen were, you know, untimely. And this week we saw he got a really bad break on Saturday, hit the flag on the 14th hole. And it would have been really close, and it ended up 15 feet, and he missed the putt. And it looked like he was going to have one of his classic meltdowns right there, but he really held himself together, finished the round strong, and that's what gave him a chance to win on Sunday.
What's nice is after it opened, what we're not talking about, because it means the USGA did their jobs when we're not discussing how the USGA did its job.
Yeah, Since John Bodenhammer and they brought Jason Gore, a former PGA Tour player and Web.com Tour player, in to have like a really hands-on role with working with the players, I think we've seen a shift in their philosophy of setup. And, you know, I think where the U.S. Open's gone a little bit is in the direction of the PGA Championship, while the PGA Championship is kind of pushing a little bit in the U.S. Open direction. So those two championships, the setups are, you know, angled more towards a difficult PGA Tour setup, more so than the old adage of the U.S. Open, which was just, you know, we're just going to take it to the players 1 week a year.
If you want to get a look at our guest, Andy Johnson, you can, because he's joining us on our Twitch stream right now. That is twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Andy Johnson of the friedegg.com joining us on the Bernstein and Rahimi show. I'm solo this week with Layla having the week off. So who's next on the list now? We can cross Rahm off of these just sort of like who's going, when is he going to win his major? Who's the next guy now? Who takes that mantle?
I think obviously it was a disappointing weekend for Xander Schauffele, who's obviously from San Diego. They talked a lot about that on the telecast. But you look at him now, he's in his short major championship career, he's had top tens in over half of his majors. with the U.S. Open, his worst finish was this week, T7 in five U.S. Open appearances, I believe. Yeah, 2016 till 2021. And then you go down. There's just a laundry list of great young players in the game, whether it be Patrick Cantlay, Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolff, who we saw lingering around. Then you've got your Tony Finau likes that, you know, have contended in a lot of majors. Scottie Scheffler was in the mix.
Will Zalatoris is another who's going to be there.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many great young players in this game. We didn't have to, you know, I think Rahm was getting to that point where you were starting to wonder when this thing was going to happen. People were getting a little antsy. He's 26 years old, but you had expected after so many great performances and big events outside of the majors, you know, when's this guy going to contend? And this was, you know, really his first time in the cauldron on late Sunday in a major where he had a real great shot to win. And it was awesome to see him pour those putts in on 17, 18. Those were just iconic U.S. Open putts and an iconic moment making that putt on 18, really.
On Thursday, Ian Happ and I were talking. He asked me for a pick, and I said it really doesn't constitute a pick. I just was hopeful. And from what I had seen, as Rory McIlroy was sort of getting some of this swing coaching out of his head when he was chasing some of the clubhead speed DeChambeau style, and it seems like he's back to being himself, and maybe I get my Rory fun back. I was hopeful that obviously it's anybody but DeChambeau or Patrick Reed as far as I'm concerned, but I was rooting hard for Rory because I like watching him. He's such a compelling golfer. I'm glad that he's back at this competitive level.
I mean, everybody loves Rory. It's hard not to like him. I mean, down to talking about how he's eating the same chicken sandwich every yep. night in his hotel room. He's just such a, you know, there's a relatability with Rory just in the way he talks. Obviously, he's been, he's got hundreds of millions of dollars, but he somehow remains relatable to, I think, like every person. There's just an aspect of it. His personality that is really gravitates towards the majority of people. It's been 7 years since he won his last major, which is just absolutely crazy because this was the guy that we thought was the on his way to Tiger type numbers in terms of majors, or at the very least Arnold Palmer, or, you know, 8 to 10 major championships. And now the last few years have been rocky, and this was the first major in a while that he's been in the mix. He posts a lot of high finishes in majors, but a lot of times they come with like a great Sunday round, you know, teeing off 2 hours before the leaders go off. This one, he was in the mix, and he just didn't seem to be able to get anything going on Sunday, but it was great that he had an opportunity on Sunday.
Before we let you go, speaking of people who are out in the wilderness, what happened to Ricky Fowler? What's going on?
That's a good question. A lot of people like to point that I think he spent like a month shooting commercials last year it came out. But I think he's a guy that's been hurt by this new wave of golfers that are extremely long. Because when he burst onto the scene, he was very long by the PGA Tour standards. And that was an elite skill, right? You know, he was in the top 30, top 40 in driving distance. And now he's kind of a middle of the pack guy. And when you just lose that little bit of edge, the world of golf is so great. I know he's been working on some swing changes, but you know, he's played decently in the last few weeks, and maybe we'll start to see him turn around. I think that's kind of been this year with Jordan Spieth losing his game, falling all the way almost outside the top 100 in the world and making this great comeback that we've seen this year. This happens a lot in golf where you go through these patches of real struggles, and hopefully he comes out of it because he's such a big star. I mean, he is one of the players that like eclipses the, you know, core passionate golf fan and gets out into the mainstream.
Andy Johnson, this is really good. Appreciate the time. We'll do this again.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. Longtime listener and happy to be on.
Very cool. Andy Johnson, the_woke_yoke, Fried Egg Golf is his newsletter. It's a good Twitter follow as well. When we come back, some details are emerging as to the one-time mysterious absence from the Cubs of Ben Zobrist. He has filed a lawsuit, and there were some strange things afoot that are now detailed in this lawsuit. He's trying to get some money back from a pastor who apparently caused him, he alleges, to be away from the game and to lose income. I mean, the details on this are somewhat salacious. They're next on The Score.
Molly
and Haw here, mornings 5 to 9.
More and more of you are getting back in the car and driving to work every day.
Remember to turn on The Score in your car when you start your commute. We'll be right there with you talking Chicago sports.
So take us with you on your way to work.
Molly and Haw, mornings 5 to 9 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
An Odyssey station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show. Only the Bernstein part of that with Layla off this week. But thanks for hanging out. This just crossed, and I don't really know how to make much sense of this, so I'm just going to stick to what it says here. This is from the Peoria Journal Star. About a year after he took a leave of absence from the Chicago Cubs, Ben Zobrist discovered his wife was having an affair with their minister, according to court documents. The minister was also accused of defrauding Zobrist's charity foundation for which he worked. The 40-year-old Zobrist made the allegations in a lawsuit filed on his behalf in May in a Tennessee circuit court. Last week, the Journal Star obtained a copy of the lawsuit. Now retired after a 13-year Major League Baseball career, Zobrist is seeking $6 million in damages from Byron Yawn, the CEO of Forrest Crane & Company, a Nashville-area business consulting firm. Yawn is also a former pastor and elder at Community Bible Church in Nashville. In that position, Yawn met Zobrist and his wife, the former Juliana Gilmore, about 16 years ago. The Zobrists, who were married in 2005, have three children. Ben Zobrist paused his 2019 Cubs season for about 4 months as he and 36-year-old Juliana Zobrist, a contemporary Christian singer, addressed their marital problems. During that stretch, Ben Zobrist lost about $8 million in income, according to the lawsuit filed May 6th in Nashville. 2 years ago, in a neighboring county, he filed for divorce. Says Yawn provided the Zobrists pre- and post-marital counseling, the lawsuit stated. This pastor and church elder was actually also their marriage counselor. Said he also counseled Ben Zobrist regarding anxiety and depression. Beginning in August of 2018, Yawn talked daily with Juliana Zobrist, the lawsuit stated. It alleged their sexual relationship began in the spring of 2019 and lasted for about a year. Yawn and Juliana Zobrist used prepaid mobile telephones to conceal their relationship. Yawn's wife, Robin Yawn, discovered the phones in May of 2019. Robin Yawn notified Ben Zobrist, but she told him she believed her husband and his wife were engaged in an emotional relationship, not a physical one, the lawsuit stated. The Zobrist then began marital counseling with this guy. Ben Zobrist did not know until June of 2020 that his wife and Byron Yawn had a sexual relationship, the lawsuit stated. Juliana Zobrist admitted the nature of the relationship and that she lied to her husband about it in responses to written requests for admission in a divorce proceeding. Ben Zobrist filed for divorce in May of 2019 in Williamson County, Tennessee, where he and his wife reside. Juliana Zobrist filed a countercomplaint in March of 2020. Those cases are pending. In May of 2019, Juliana Zobrist filed in Chicago for divorce, but that petition was dismissed days later. Okay. So it says, during the time as his marriage began to crumble, Zobrist was confiding in Byron Yawn. Yikes. Okay. I'm not sure the details of how his charity was defrauded in this. If in fact it was just saying, Yawn worked himself into a leadership position with Patriot Forward, a not-for-profit group Ben Zobrist founded. Its purpose is to help professional athletes tend to their mental health and prepare for life after their careers. Yawn drafted his job description as executive director of the charity. But in March 2019, he was terminated. He still continued to draw a $3,500 monthly salary until May of 2019. The lawsuit didn't explain how Yon was issued those checks other than to say it was done fraudulently. The lawsuit revealed Ben Zobrist donated significant sums to Community Bible Church. On average, he contributed $10,000 monthly and gave the Yon family between $10,000 and $15,000 to fund a pastoral trip. Boy, then you find out that, wow, that's no fun. That's no good. That is the Peoria Journal Star that actually got a copy of that lawsuit and those ugly details. We will do transition with Lawrence Holmes next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.